Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Chris Chavez.
I think the biggest benefit I've had is being able to find other people who are as motivated to chase some of these goals and having a team around me. Whether it's, you know, we're all training for a marathon in the summer and we meet for a Saturday morning long run, that helps keep me accountable every week for, you know, 16 to 18 weeks, and it really shows on race day.
On this episode of The Rundown, we had the pleasure of speaking with elite middle distance runner and Olympian Carrie Tollefson. She takes us through her journey of national titles, NCAA championships, and eventually the Olympics, but her career didn't end there. Today, she's a mother of three, a broadcaster, and also hosts her own podcast. She's full of energy and positivity, so we hope you enjoy this up-tempo chat. This episode is brought to you by Cure Hydration. Cure Hydration is an organic electrolyte mix based on the gold standard of rehydration. Known as oral rehydration solution, it's a perfectly balanced formula developed by the World Health Organization that can hydrate as effectively as an IV drip. One pack of Cure has four times the electrolytes of a sports drink, but no added sugar or other junk. Made with organic coconut water and pink Himalayan salt, Cure is designed to help you recover from a tough workout, late night, or illness. Use code LARUNDOWN for 25% off your first order. In this week's news, I want to talk about nutrition for runners and what we should be paying more attention to. As a vegan runner myself, I try to be aware of what I'm putting in my body so that I can train and perform to the best of my ability. In an article posted in runnersmagazine.ca, they highlight magnesium, carbohydrates, iron, vitamin D, and B12 as key nutrients that runners tend to be low on. Signs you might be low on magnesium might be constipation, aching muscles, cramps, irregular sleep, and insomnia. For iron, you might experience fatigue and compromised endurance, paleness, shortness of breath, hair breakage, cold hands and feet, and low mood. For B12, you might start to notice nerve changes, like pins and needles. Runners might also notice mood changes as well. Vitamin D symptoms include bone pain, especially soreness in the back and shins. Runners might also feel things like muscle acheness and weakness. And my personal favorite, carbs. That's when you might have sugar cravings later in the day. I know that there's lots of messaging around low-carb diets, but runners do need their carbs. So if you're having a salad, for example, make sure to have rice or sweet potato with it too. Make sure to check the show notes for links to news and information about these articles, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. So I've had many elite runners on this podcast. My next guest is also an elite runner. She's also a mom and she hosts her own podcast too. Even has got into broadcasting. So I'd like to welcome to the show, Carrie Tollefson.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to join us. I always like having podcasts or fellow podcast hosts on too, because it usually makes for pretty good conversation, and it's nice to not, you know, to share the mic with people like that too.
Yeah, we're pretty chatty, us podcasters, so, and runners. So we can talk about, like, you know, a dot on the wall and hopefully find some interest in it.
For sure. How's life been for you right now with everything going on with COVID? And I know you're in Minnesota right now. Yeah. That's where you live, and with your family. And how's that been for you, for interviews, for running, just in life in general?
Sure. You know, I love being home. I have never been home this much in my life. You know, ever since I was little, I've been racing on the weekends, and then I went to college and was racing pretty much every weekend. And then as a pro, obviously going all the time. And now I'm a broadcaster and, you know, I do a lot of the commentary at different races. I speak all over. I have a podcast myself. So I don't think I'm ever home for more than one weekend in a row. So it's been different. I've really enjoyed being home, but obviously really wish it were under different circumstances with the pandemic that we're in. And, you know, just with kiddos and, you know, life in general, it just, it's scary right now. We were talking before we started recording that, you know, life is just different and it is a little uneasy, but, the silver lining is I get more time with my family. So I'm happy to be safe and sound here in St. Paul, Minnesota. And, yeah, but missing the running world that, you know, I so love.
Yeah. And I should also mention Minnesota is also a hockey city too, right? So, yeah. You know, that's something else we have in common. Montreal and Minnesota are big, big hockey towns.
Yeah. Ironically,
has it given you, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, ironically, my husband just took my 7-year-old to go and get all suited up because we have a COVID or a quarantine family, we call them, who we hang out with. And we are basketball players in our family. We didn't have hockey where I grew up in southern Minnesota. We played on the rinks, but we didn't have an organized sport. But my 7-year-old just got all suited up. So he's all ready because it's going to be a long winter. And I think one of the activities we're going to be able to do is play outdoor hockey. So we're ready for it.
Awesome. Yeah. And does it get pretty cold down there too in Minnesota?
Oh, like, how is so it for
training?
It's, yeah. I used to go to Arizona every winter for when I was training as a pro for winters, but you know, we get cold weather. I'd say like 4 weeks out of the winter, it's brutal. It's like, you know, 10 degrees or less. And I don't like it, but I'll deal with it. I'm tough. I can handle it.
has a pandemic kind of given you, I know for myself, it's given me new purpose in my running. Mm. Has it changed for you? And have you noticed the change in maybe how you train or I don't know how, like to what extent you're training or what you're training for at the moment, but maybe you can shed some light on that.
Yeah. You know, I think the pandemic there's been good and bad with my training, to be honest. I've loved being able to get out the door and having that moment of either quietness on my own or having a little conversation with some of my training partners that I've been able to train with throughout it. But to be honest, you know, in the city that we live, or in the Twin Cities is what we call Minneapolis and St. Paul here in the States, we've had a lot of unrest with, you know, what I think is the murder of George Floyd. It's just been terrible and very uneasy for our city. And the social and civil unrest has been, you know, troublesome, but also so sad. And, you know, it just makes you really look in the mirror a different way and ask yourself if you're living and treating people the way you should. But also when I go outside for a run, I'm also a little bit nervous about what's happening because so many people are, you know, they're upset and it's just different. I mean, it's even hard for me to explain it. It's just different. But when I go for a run, I always come back feeling better about myself, feeling better about my health, feeling better about my mental health. So, yeah, long story short, I don't think there's a negative about my run ever, but has it changed my training? I don't know. I mean, am I a little bit more nervous to go for a run? Yes. And I'm sad to say that, but yes, I am kind of nervous when I'm out by myself, especially. But do I love it just as much or more? Probably, because when I come home to 3 kids who are in my face for 12 hours a day by myself, because my husband goes to work every day, I'm happy for the run.
Yeah. It gives you some alone time to yourself too. And I think, yeah, like it gives us a break from, you know, I don't bring my phone with me when I'm running, and it gives us a break from everything and, just allows us to clear our mind. It's like you say, it's good for mental health too. And yeah, it's just, I mean, with no races on the calendar, it's been nice to just go out and run and not really have a purpose to the training, just like, just for your own personal well-being and fitness. I think that's a good thing for sure.
It's so true.
Can you take us back? Yeah, go ahead.
I was just say I do a long run challenge, and I don't know if you saw this on my social media, but I do a long run challenge 2 or 3 times a year where I start at 10 miles because that's kind of my middle of the road. It's a hard run for me. But, you know, it's something that I feel like I can go back to, even if I've had a couple, you know, down months or a couple down weeks, I can always kind of pull out a 10 mile, which sounds silly to some people because that's a really long run for a lot of people. But I've been running for so many years that I can still come back to that, you know, but I start at 10 and I go to 20. So it's an 11 week ordeal. And I go up 1 mile every week. And so it's, that is what I've been doing during the pandemic. I'm not in it right now. I'm done with it, but that was really fun for me to do, Justin, because it was like, oh, hey, this is, you know, what I can handle. And it's giving me a purpose every week to do a good long, hard run. So that was one of my tricks that I used during this time.
That's awesome. Hopefully some of our listeners can use it as well. Can you take us back to the beginning, kind of, you know, how you grew up and where you grew up and, you know, what kind of family you grew up in, and was athletics present in your life from an early age, and kind of when running crept in?
Yeah, I started running in 1989. I know, I'm old. I don't know if you know how old I am, but I'm old. I'm 43. Okay. And I've been running since then, since 1989. And so I went out for the sport because my middle sister, so I have two older sisters. My middle sister was a senior in high school in the 12th grade here. And I was in seventh grade. And that was one sport I could be on a team with one of my sisters. The other one was in college. So yeah, that's how it all started. I basically sat on my sister's shoulder in my very first race because I was allowed to compete at the varsity level. We lived in a town of 1600 people. So pretty much everyone made varsity. Mm-hmm. If you made the team, you made varsity. And, you know, I loved it from day one, not necessarily knowing what I was doing, but just being able to be with my sister, who was a really good athlete, someone I looked up to, and also just the thrill of kind of trying to win at a young age. So yeah, I ran starting in, you know, as a 12-year-old and just grew with the sport. I ended up winning 13 state championships as a junior high and high schooler. I ran all the way through high school. I competed in basketball. I really loved basketball. And actually, I had my center went on and played pro basketball over in Rome. So we had a good basketball team, just a really fun little town that I grew up in. We were all in music, all in acting. We played every sport you could possibly think of. And just really, that was our fun. You know, we weren't partiers. I've never had a drink of alcohol in my life. Like, we just played sports, went home, slept, went to school, and played sports again. So it was really fun. And then from there, I went to Villanova University, which is out in Philadelphia, and had a lot of really fun Canadian teammates, and actually two of my best friends, Christina Sullivan and Carmen Duma-Hassar. Both Canadian, both great runners. Carmen went on to compete with me in 2004 at the Olympic Games. So we are both professional runners. And then now we're both mommies of three, and still very much in touch. And life from there is just, you know, college on to pro. And you know what is so funny? Carmen is calling my phone right now. That is hilarious. I wish I could take a picture for you guys. Carmen Duma-Hassar is calling me as I speak. Like, how random.
Her ears are ringing.
Yeah, that is how we are. We are telepathic, us two.
So was there like a sibling rivalry when you were growing up, or was it pretty much just like, was it for fun? Because like, you winning 13 state championships, and like, how was that? Was there pressure? Was it just fun? Like, what is that growing up like? What is that like growing up as a kid? Like, to have that much success at an early age, and did you start to think about your future in the sport, or were people telling you where you could go because they've seen like athletes of your pedigree in the past?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing for me is where I grew up was really fun. Like, I just alluded to it, that we got to do everything. And, you know, when you're in that small of a community, you become family with everyone. So there wasn't pressure. I wouldn't call it that. I think it was more just support and, you know, tons of cheerleaders along the way to say, hey, you can do this. You know, it wasn't like, you have to do this, or, you know, you have another state championship to win. It was, Carrie, like, this is so fun. Like, we're all here for you. You know, they were all there. If I, you know, had a down week or I was hurt or whatever, they just were there to pick us all up. And it wasn't just me. It was everybody in our community. We were picking everybody up. And I tell the story that my center went on to play professional basketball because I think that's just what happened. Like, you saw the best in whatever any of those kids did out there, and everyone wanted them to succeed. So, yeah, I mean, there was internal pressure from myself. I think the pressure came from, like, for instance, the big newspapers from, you know, like the Twin Cities area, where they would say, oh, she can't win again. Like, this girl's going to grow. And she, you know, I won as an eighth grader in state cross country. And then I won again in outdoor track as an eighth grader. And, you know, there's a lot of people that think girls change and, you know, they grow and then they're not as good when they're in 10th and 11th and 12th grade. Well, they were writing about that. And I just wanted to prove them wrong. So there was pressure there. But in my community, it was more support. And I think that's why I wanted to be so good. It was for my small community. It was for my family. It was for me. But it was because it was fun. So I felt it. I remember there was a time where I had won like 100 straight races in the state of Minnesota. I did not lose from eighth grade. And so eighth grade cross country state championship, I won. And then I did not lose until my senior year. I dropped down and ran the 800 at state track. And I lost my very last race as a high schooler. Oh. So in, you know, all those years I hadn't lost. So that, I think there was a little pressure there, knowing that every time I won a race, there was another number that the papers wrote about. Like, it's our 112th race. It's our 113th. So yeah, there was pressure, but
how did you deal with losing?
So I dealt with it in a way where I was in a Christian singing group, because that's what you do in Dawson as well. In this little town, you're in everything. And so we were heading out to do a 2-week tour, and we were going to Disneyland. To be honest, we were going to perform in Disneyland. And so I got done with the race and I was pretty bummed, but I got on the tour bus with, you know, 50 other kids, and we were going to Disneyland. So I didn't have much time to really be down. And also it was a Christian singing tour. So I had this time to reflect and kind of think about my purpose and why I dropped down to the 800 and what the goal was. And so I think I learned early on that it's okay to get second. It's okay to get fifth. It's okay to get 10th. But when you give it your all, that's the reward and that's the victory. And I did, I gave it my all. So I was super bummed. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was sad, and it was like, oh shoot, why'd I run the 800 when I maybe could have won the 2 mile again for the fifth time in a row. But I was proud of myself for trying something, for going for it. And it was a barn burner, if you can say that. We were right at the finish line together. It was basically a photo finish, and we gave the crowd a show, and people still talk about it to this day. They're like, do you remember when you ran that 800? You know, so it was fun. The woman that I ran against, or the girl I ran against, she ended up going into Division I and running the 4 and the 8. So, you know, it was a really good matchup. It was fun.
Did you ever go back to run the 800 again?
I had to run it a few times at Villanova. I ran it actually at my PR is from the Olympics when I was, yeah, in a time trial. I ran 204 in Athens, Greece, at the practice track. So, you know, I didn't run it very much, but I enjoyed it.
But but that defeat didn't seem to affect you, like, later, because you went on to win NCAA championships and also in the indoor track too, and won Athlete of the Year. So, I mean, clearly there was a talent level that you had, or, you know, a potential that you had. Did you realize that potential as you entered Villanova, or who made you realize that potential? Like, did you always have the confidence? I mean, after all those wins and stuff, it must have given you some confidence, but was there a coach that believed in you, or some teammates that did, or what was the driving force that pushed you to try and win more and also have success further down the line and eventually get you to the Olympics?
Yeah, you know, I think the common denominator is my family. I mean, really, I have had great coaches and awesome teammates and training partners, and like I said, the support from my small community back home. But I mean, every time I came home, and I think it is so crucial for families to make sure they understand that, you know, kids hang on to the words of their parents and their older siblings. And, you know, if you can be kind and encouraging and supportive and, you know, just loving, that is so important. And being the youngest of the family, I think I saw a lot of what happened before me. And my dad was a college football player. My mom was not allowed to play sports at that time. I mean, she just grew up in a time where there were no sports for girls. Ironically, they even covered the windows when they were in Phi Ed. So, you know, my dad and his buddies couldn't see my mom and her girlfriends playing in Phi Ed. They used to try to peek, I guess, and they got in big trouble. So, you know, it's just such a different time. And I remember my mom, you know, she was so into sports and she loved it. And I just remember her saying, I never had this opportunity. So don't, you know, let it go to waste. And my dad, you know, just sitting down and taking the time to go for a run with me, or, you know, taking the time to talk to me about what was going well in my running or in my basketball and what we could work on. I mean, that was so important. And then to have my sisters who would, you know, have shirts that said, Carrie's my little sister, and they just being so proud. I think that is what has kept me going all these years. I mean, they're still like that. I'm still their little sister, and they're still so proud of anything that I do, and they show support. And then they'll kick me in the butt when I need it. You know, I mean, we do have this loving family, but we also have a family that's like, hey, if you're going to sign up for something, you're going to stick it out. Or if you're going to commit to it, let's go. And that was how it was at Villanova. You know, I went to Villanova because it was the best running school in the country. And I went there. It was 26 hours away from my home. I didn't realize that. It was a 2-hour airplane ride, but it was a long drive. And when I went to Villanova, they had all these NCAA champions. And I was not going to step onto the team and be the best. I was not going to go to NCAAs and win everything right away. I knew I had to do some work. And it was a really cool time in my life. And once I got to the top, that was really rewarding and really fun. So the whole journey was awesome, but I would not have done it without my family.
Isn't it humbling too, when you're around those caliber of athletes as well, when you're, you know, you're an impressive athlete yourself, but then you're surrounded by the best because you're at the best school. And do you think that pushed you to be even better than if you were, let's say, maybe at another school or training by yourself?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when I came to Villanova, Jen Rines was on the team and she had just won the NCAA championships again. She ended up being a 5-time NCAA champion, individually. So yeah, it was, it was a little humbling to know I was going to have to try and keep up with her. And I remember, I mean, early on in the season, that's what our coach at the time said, hang on to Jen through mile one. And each time he was hoping we'd hang on a little longer. We had a funny story, and you know, us runners tell stories. We're kind of open books. And so I'm just going to tell it, even though some people might be like, why'd she have to tell that story? But indoors, I remember running one of my first 3Ks with Jen Rines, and coach said, I want you to get through the first mile with her again. That was kind of his strategy with me, like, you know, get me to a certain distance and then let me fall apart after that. So I got to the first mile and I think we ran a 4:48 or something crazy. I mean, that was a new PR for me. I think I had run 4:40 or 4:53 for a full mile when I was in high school. So I went through the mile, my eyes bugged out, and I think everyone's like, just calm down. Well, then we proceeded, both of us, to slow down. I peed my pants. Like, it was like crazy. My body was going through all kinds of gyrations, you know, like, I never done that. But after that race, like, good thing we had navy blue bottoms. Nobody really knew except Jen. And now the whole world does, because I've told that story a million times. But, you know, I remember exiting the track and talking, saying, Jen, oh my gosh, I peed my pants. And then but she was like, but Carrie, you PR'd through the mile and you kept on going. And, you know, so I had those moments of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? But I always had people to say, hey, but you're getting further along in the race, or you're doing this in the workouts. And so it was very humbling and a little embarrassing at times. but I got there. And then by the time I was a junior, I won and I had my first really big injury right after my first NCAA championship. I had a tumor in my heel where they filled with donor bone and I was off for 6 months and all this stuff. And then I came back and ended up winning 4 more NCAA championships. So it's just a really, it was a powerful moment in my life, like being at Villanova, because I went there being this, you know, girl that won so many races and really didn't, I mean, I lost maybe like 5 times in my entire high school career. And then I went out there and I was getting beat every day. And for a year, 2 years, you know, I was getting beat. And it was good for me to see that I could get back to where I once was. I could get back to the top of the podium. And I had been able to get through injuries as well and just life-changing moments. So, you know, even though the run was so important, the whole life journey was really important.
Mm. And like a lot of athletes, there's some kind of injury that you went through. How did you get through that injury and how did that affect you, if it affected you at all?
Oh, it affected me, you know, hugely. Like that was the biggest injury I had. I had injuries beforehand. And ironically too, that's another funny story. I had my first injury out there was I had a hernia on the left side and I ran to my doctor because nobody really saw the hernia sticking out except me, because even when I went to the athletic training room, it had like, you know, gone down a little bit. I don't know if anyone has had a hernia or if you've had one, but a lot of times with hernias, they like kind of, they pop out. There's like, it looks like a golf ball sticking out of your, you know, your body. And so mine was right kind of in the crease between, you know, like kind of by my hip flexor area, my mm-hmm. pubic bone, if you want to get real biological here or whatever you want to say. But I when I'd run, it pop out and then it would go back pretty quick. So I ran up to my doctor and I said, can you come in and see me real quick? And then I just showed him fast. And he was like, oh yeah, you have a hernia, not just a strained muscle. You have a hernia. So, you know, the injuries, the ups and downs, I mean, all of that is just what makes you so tough. And the big injury with my tumor in my heel, that was life changing. So that was totally a different experience. It wasn't just like, you're going to be away from the sport. It could be cancer. We didn't know if it was clear of cancer until they actually went in and tested the tissue and looked at the bone. That's a whole podcast in itself, because it was a huge journey to know I had it. I ran through it because we didn't know I'd come back from it. I won my first NCAA championship. Somebody donated a piece of, you know, one of their deceased loved ones to me so I could continue on to run. And, you know, it saved my career. It saved my foot and saved my life. So yeah, I mean, coming back from those injuries, you really do become different people. And I was thankful I came out on the other side and hungry and eager to race again.
Mm. And you were, you know, the first, you ended up being the first person in NCAA history to win 3K and 5K titles. So what are those your favorite distances, though? Is something I was curious about.
I think the 3K is definitely probably my favorite distance. I loved running the 1500 because for me, my mind could handle running 1500. My mind could handle the 3K. The 5K ended up being probably my best event as a pro. But I didn't love the fact that, you know, all the thinking that went into it, which I tried not to think, because that is where I think I got beat a lot of times, was just in my own head. The 15 and the 3K were probably my favorites, but the 5 was where it was at for me. I do wish I would have tried the steeplechase. I didn't. And being a basketball player and somebody that, you know, I feel like I'm pretty agile and athletic, I think I would have been really good at it. But it just was so new while I was competing that we didn't know if it was going to take off and all that stuff. So, yeah.
It's what I find a lot of track runners say, like, I should have tried the steeplechase, or I told my coach I wanted to try it and he wouldn't let me, or like something along those lines, you know?
I know. And it's so fun to see the way it's just exploded, especially for the women. But, you know, I was in that era where it was, you know, an exhibition event at the Olympic Games. Like, it was just starting.
Hmm. Did you, was it tough to balance education, being an elite athlete at school, and also trying to still be a kid?
Yes. Like, no doubt about it. My first semester was terrible, but mainly because I missed home so much. It wasn't that I, you know, wasn't smart enough to be at Villanova. It wasn't that I couldn't handle being at a really prestigious school that had both academics and athletics, it was more that I think it was a new transition for me to be away from my family in that small community. You know, as much as I say I loved the support and loved kind of being in that small town feel, it was also maybe a little bit of, you know, a little isolating. And I was very pampered because it was so small. We could call in anybody and we'd have help. So going that far away from home, being in a big city like Philadelphia, I just had to learn how to live on my own. And I had a lot of resources there that would help me, but it still was big, you know? And so, yeah, it was very hard for me. But once I got through that first semester, then it started to click and I was good from then on. So it was just the transition that was tough.
When did the realization that the Olympics might be a possibility for you click?
You know, I want to say that it was when I had Olympians that were calling me and recruiting me. So my coach at Villanova was an Olympic athlete. John Marshall was an 800 meter runner. And then the assistant coach at the time, now head coach, Gina Procaccio, she was also a professional runner, had actually won the 5K at the US Championships the year she was recruiting me. So when I had people like that saying, you're really good and we want you here at Villanova, but we also want you to have a career in this sport, I think that's where I really was like, oh, wait a second, I could do this for a living. So it was fun to have coaches and especially a female coach that was like, listen, this is what I do. I get paid to run. And it's because I'm really good at it. And we think you have that potential. That's where it just started like, oh, hey, this is kind of cool. Like maybe I'll get to wear the red, white, and blue one day.
Did you have an idea of what you would have done if you weren't a pro runner? Like, as if you just thought that that was a possibility, like at that moment, maybe you were thinking something different, maybe with your education?
Oh, for sure. You know, when I went to college, I always knew I was one injury away or something to take away the sport. And that was one thing my parents instilled in me from very early on. Like I brought my violin with me out to Villanova just in case I wanted to, you know, jump in the orchestra or I sang in a choir out there, because you never know if you're going to be able to compete because of injuries or illness or whatever. So I always had something to fall back on. But when I went to Villanova, I didn't know what I wanted to do necessarily outside of school when I was done. I thought maybe I wanted to be on TV. I wanted to maybe be a meteorologist. I thought maybe I wanted to be a lawyer. I loved acting. Like I had all kinds of ideas. And then I kind of narrowed it into being a broadcaster and had an internship at two different TV stations. And so, yeah, I mean, it was really fun to kind of let that happen. But it was a little nerve-wracking at first because I had so many different ideas of what I wanted to do. And I think the underlying, you know, reason for me going that far away from home into that kind of a school was because I did want to be the best runner I could be.
So when you have your eyes set on the Olympics, what goes into it in terms of like training? Do you like give up everything else just for that goal, or are you still, you know, working on the side? Like, how does it look for an aspiring Olympian like yourself at that time?
Yeah, again, I kind of always had that frame of mind, like, if, you know, sport can be taken away any second. So I always worked while I was training for the Olympics, but my training came first and foremost. So I tried to work around my training. So, you know, and it could have been something as easy as being a nanny and that's not easy. I'm not saying that's easy, but you know, like it wasn't, you know, going into work and, you know, having a resume and all that stuff necessarily. But I was a nanny and then I worked at a shoe store. I always did something in the media, and this was before podcasting and YouTubing and all this fun stuff. You know, I did some voiceover work. I graduated in 99, was there through 2000 at Villanova through my fifth year. And then I started to compete and do some things here and there. And then in 2002, I was second at our US cross country championships. And I said to Tony Revis, who's one of the most famous race commentators here in the States and abroad. But he said, he was interviewing me and I said, Tony, I'd love to have your job. I went to school for broadcast and, you know, I just love what you do, getting to talk to the athletes and sharing their stories. And he remembered. And later that year, I was doing some rock and roll marathon commentary with him. So, you know, in my early, I mean, I was a professional runner in 2001. That was my first year. And so by 2002, I was already doing races here and there, but it was never a 9-to-5 job. I never had that kind of a job. I had, you know, speaking, or I held camps, or I did this and that. So I really had time to live the lifestyle that an Olympic athlete really should, you know, where you train and you rest and you get your treatment and things like that. But I also still kept my foot in other places and other doors.
Hmm. And you say, and then you would also, well, that's also, that's a great way to look at it. Cause you know, eventually, like you say, there's gotta be a life after running, or after your pro running career. Mm-hmm. And you won the 1500 meter trials, which was amazing, and leading into the Olympics. So what was the Olympic experience like? And maybe even like, what was the trial experience like? Cause you're mm-hmm. competing again against the best in the country.
Yeah. The trials were pretty, that was like a roller coaster ride because everyone thought I was going to make the team in the 5K, my agent, my coaches. I mean, I think a lot of the people thought I had a really good chance to make the team. I had just run 1504 in sort of a strategic race. And, you know, I think that the way the season was going, that's where we were totally thinking 5K. And I had a mental lapse with just over a K to go. And I ended up getting sixth at the trials. And here in the States, if you're not in the top three and you don't have the time standard, you don't get to go. So I had the time standard. All I needed was to do was place in the top three. And it didn't happen. So I came back and ran the 1500, which I was good at, but I was not a favorite in that event, and ended up leading basically from start to finish, winning with the B standard, went over to Europe. I raced 5.5 times in, I want to say 12 days. And I had to run against all of the Americans. Basically, we all lined up every single time and we were trying to get the standard. I ran 406.1, 406.3, I think a 406.4. And the A standard was 405.8. And they ended up only taking me because I was the winner with 406.1 and no one else had the A standard. So it was kind of a different way to make the Olympic team. But, you know, those were the rules then. And all of the Americans tried so hard. We all were trying to get that. And it was a different time then. There weren't a lot of races set up to be a 402 or 4 flat. It was kind of, we were just racing to the finish line then, not looking at the clock as much. So, yeah, crazy experience. But the Olympic trials were one that like totally made me feel like I can handle anything in life. Mm. It was such an emotional roller coaster ride, a physical roller coaster ride, and, you know, just a really exciting one.
Were some of the, because you get to interview a lot of runners now, and you also do like broadcasting still to this day. What are some of the challenges that runners today are facing at the trials compared to what you went through?
Yeah, I mean, they're running so much faster. It's crazy. I mean, and I think that the talent was still there. I mean, I like to just say I was just as talented as anyone still now, at least I hope. You know, but the talent was there. It was different. And now you just see these amazing times and the pressure to run so fast, even in like now and during the pandemic, and they're setting up these time trials and they're getting it done. I mean, they're American records that are being set, and they are some of the fastest 5Ks ever, you know, with the Bowerman women running 14:23 and 14:26, and they're running 4 flat in practice. I mean, it's unbelievable. I know that they have a lot of people to run fast around, but it's still practice. Mm-hmm. So the sport has really changed, and it's really cool to see the evolution that, you know, we're in right now. And also that's happened since I was racing, but, you know, it's still the same hard work. It's still the same grit and grind that we had. It's just a different level now. And, you know, back when I was racing, breaking 15 minutes was kind of the spot for everyone. And now it's, you know, breaking 14:30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's insanely fast too.
It's insane. Crazy. It's crazy.
I just saw like one of Canada's best runners, and she had a great year last year, Gabriella Stafford. Mm-hmm. She joined the Bowerman Track Club. So it's exciting to have a Canadian down there.
Yeah, she's running awesome.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's fun to watch the trials too, and like definitely getting into it through podcasting and talking to more runners, you get a sense for like the urgency. Do you know, is there something that stands out, like why runners are faster today? Is it like technology? Is it nutrition? Is it recovery? Is it all those things? Like what can you pinpoint something that, is it just like the competition's more fierce and runners have gotten faster over and over the years?
Yeah, well, I think one thing is, you know, here in the States especially, it does feel like the playing field in athletics now, or track and field, as most people know it, it does seem like it's getting better. And when we were racing, you know, there were a number of countries that were just winning all the time. And there was this, you know, lots of talk about drug use. And it was defeating even before you got to the line a lot of times. It was like, why? You know, I tried to put it behind me and think I can run with anybody, as you know, and I was scared of taking a Sudafed. Like I played by the rules, probably so much so that I didn't even take the right vitamins. I didn't. I just ate. If someone said I was low on iron, I mean, it really, I had to see such low iron numbers that I didn't want to take iron. It made my stomach icky. And so I just would rather eat something to make it go up. And you know how that doesn't really happen that fast. So I don't know. It's just a whole ball game, but I never, ever wanted to take anything that had any, you know, anywhere close to the gray line or gray area. So I think now there's just a better equal playing field across the entire globe. And I feel like here in America and even in Canada, you know, we're able to win. And that once you get a taste, or you see somebody that you've competed against be at the top, everyone follows suit. And I really think that change has helped, you know, at least here in North America, us like kind of say, okay, we can compete with anybody. And, and also just the races here in North America are amazing now. So that to me, it doesn't seem like the training is much different. Technology. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously I don't want to get into the shoe discussion, but I mean, I think that has obviously been a big factor, but they are allowed for everyone all over the globe. So there again, it's equal playing field. I mean, that's a really like loaded question, but I don't think that we didn't have the talent. It's just, there has been a shift, and I like the shift. I think it's been really fun and really cool to see.
It's very exciting. And actually the Olympics you went to is one that, we just had a guest on, Meb was also there, in Athens, Greece. Can you talk about your Olympic experience and what that was like? And can you say, like, has that been your greatest accomplishment, getting to the Olympic Games?
Yeah. I mean, and so fun to talk about Meb. Meb and I have been racing with each other at the same races since high school. And I just did an interview with him, and he is just a delight, you know. And you probably didn't get to see him run on the track, but so fun to see him run on the roads. But when he and Abdurrahman used to run here, and they'd run at Stanford a lot, the crowd would get into it. They would be hyping the crowd during these 10Ks. If you could go back and watch some of those races, which a lot of times we didn't even have video, and that's crazy. It's the early 2000s. Like, come on. But yeah, I mean, going to the Olympic Games was amazing. And I think one of my favorite things was, you know, being at the opening ceremonies and actually walking out. And, you know, we were at war then too. It was kind of a scary time, and we didn't know how the Americans would be welcomed, and we were welcomed with open arms, and there were people that were so excited for us. And, you know, when I looked behind me, I had the professional basketball players, and LeBron James was right behind me. And I remember turning around and seeing him, and I was bawling. I was like a mess because I was just so excited. Like, oh my gosh, I finally made it. This girl that won the 1500 in the B time, and I'm here, whatever. And I turned around and saw LeBron James, and he's this, you know, huge man. And he was young then. He was super young. And he had tears just rolling down his face. And it was deafening because it was so loud. But in that moment, it was also deafening because it was like, wow, all these great athletes are surrounded in this track, and we're out there standing for 5 hours. You can't go to the bathroom. It's crazy. But I mean, wow. We're out there, and it's just, it's, you know, you can't even hardly explain it, but it's also that feeling of I achieved a goal that is, you know, something you never really think you're going to do. And it was pretty spectacular. I mean, it's hard to explain, but when I introduce myself on my podcast or if someone introduced me as an Olympian, I cherish that and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, it's got to be an incredible experience. And like, I have no idea what that's like, but I love talking about it. And I can only imagine like that's got to be like definitely a highlight of anyone's career. And definitely talking to Meb about it and the way he went about that race and like just his whole life story and stuff. And I always get chills when I hear people talk about it. So.
I had Gwen Jorgensen and her mom and sister on my last podcast, and it's actually on this week here, September, I don't even know, 17th or something like that. But they were talking about the moment that her sister actually got to see her after she won her gold, and they had a quiet time. It was like 8 hours after the race, and her sister finally got to just give her a hug and just tell her how proud she was. And you know, us in media, like we're not supposed to show a lot of emotion, and I'm on my podcast and I get that weird, like crying voice. Like it's like a you know, like you got like something in your throat type thing. And I couldn't help it. And I still, even like when I think about going out at the opening ceremonies or standing on that start line and they announce my name, you know, the American Carrie Tellefson or from the United States, Carrie Tellefson, like, I get chills, I get tears in my eyes, I get sweat rings, like everything happens, my heart starts to beat. And yeah, it's just, it was really neat. And I think we all have moments in life like that. Like obviously having my three children and getting married is better than the Olympic Games, but it was, yeah, it changed my life for sure.
It's different. It's just different, right?
Yeah, it is different.
And was that like the height of your career? Was that like the pinnacle, or was there things you experienced that were that brought you to that level of emotion, let's say, after the Olympics?
Yeah, no, I think the Olympic Games are probably the pinnacle of my career. I mean, I had a really good 2006, but I kept getting injuries and it was kind of a roller coaster ride. I struggled a lot with wanting to have children. My husband and I waited 7 years, you know, I mean, it was, there were lots of ups and downs. They were good ups and downs. And even injuries, I think, are good at times because you come back hungry and ready to go. Mm-hmm. But after the Olympic Games, I wanted to come back in 2008 and make the team. And I ended up getting pneumonia right before the trials. And I just was a mess. I could not run. I had no oxygen at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think after 2008, it was kind of like, okay, you know, like if I don't get back there, you know, what am I doing type thing. I tried really hard to come back, but I think after that, it was sort of like, okay, let's see what else there is to offer. And we had our first baby in 2010, and then life kind of took off in the broadcast world, which now I look back and I think, you know what, it probably would have been easier for me to be an athlete rather than traveling all over, you know, being a broadcaster. But I love that. And I've loved being able to do it. And, you know, hopefully we get back to these races now where I can go and do a little bit more, but if not, life will take me on a different journey and that will be okay.
Yeah. And you're so good at it too. Like, is it, so I guess a follow-up question to that, like, is it hard to, you know, because Olympic athletes, it's a funny thing. Like you get all this attention, you know, and in the track world, it's not like a huge world. That, right. You know, not like, you know, maybe basketball or hockey or these other sports or soccer or whatever. But is it hard to come from that, like that height in your career? And, you know, there's a lot of like attention and a lot of focus on it to going to, you know, not that much after. Like, how do you, you know, because you identify as a runner, how do you continue life after without going through kind of like this letdown? And kind of like maybe again in your emotions too.
Yeah, you know, it is hard. There are times when you kind of forget that you're not this specimen, if you can call us that. That's just the first word that came to mind. I don't know if I was ever a specimen, but you know, like you kind of feel like, okay, now I'm just going to get slower every single year. And I do, I get slower every single year. But I think that also the hard part for me was just finding that thing that made me tick, you know, like I still love the run. I still love getting up for it. I miss it when I don't do it. I don't necessarily miss the gut wrenching, you know, K's on the track or the mile repeats, that kind of thing. But I miss being really, really good and committed to something. I love the world of broadcast. I love speaking. I love doing everything, but I'm also really nervous all the time that, you know, things can be taken away from me in a second. You know, there's another young, more decorated athlete that wants to get on air. Well, they're going to, you know, maybe slide her in instead of having me. And so, you know, it's been a little unsettling that way, just not knowing where my path is. And I'm not in control of it, right? Like I was in control of my run and of my racing, but I'm not the producer. I'm not the people hiring. I'm not, you know, the whole network. And so I can only do my best on air and then hope I get more gigs. So it's just it's been hard. And I do remember, just because I always try to keep things a little light, I remember thinking, oh, I flew Delta Air a lot. And like a year after I was done competing, my elite status went away there too. And I'm like, oh geez, like I'm getting slower. I don't have elite status, you know, to fly anymore. Not that it really helped that much, but it was still fun to get first class every now and then. Like everything was going downhill, but then I started having my babies and everything, you know, from there was awesome. So, I'm nervous right now, to be honest, Justin, just with the life that we're living without races and without in-person speaking and things like that. But I think I've learned so much from the run that I know I can get through tough times and I know that I'll be able to pivot. Like it's just a moment in time and I have learned so much from sport that I'll be okay.
Hmm. Yeah. Normally I ask this question later. So what is running taught you that helps you with your now, you know, with your more regular life, we could say?
I mean, to be blunt, it's taught me I'm one kick butt woman. Like I know that I can handle tough things and, you know, not that I'm any better than anyone. I just know internally. And when I look at myself in the mirror, even though there are defeating moments and there's days where I'm just like, what is next? And I think about what's next all the time. I'm in that moment in my life where I'm nervous about finances and making sure my family's okay. But I also think I can handle it. Like I go back to those races where I got my butt kicked or I fell or whatever and come back. So I know that I'll be able to come back and find something different or, you know, hopefully get back to where I was and doing better than I did before. So I'm not worried about performing. It's just not knowing what tomorrow will bring that worries me.
Yeah, the uncertainty definitely is a little unsettling, especially like in times like this. Like I know even for myself, like, you know, work is limited. I actually took a job like way up north in Nunavut. I'm working up there. It's pretty cold these days, but like something I normally wouldn't have done, but it gives you like kind of like a different opportunity. And then when I come home, like I do the podcast, which it's like a passion that I found. Like, do you find like that you're following it, you know, still in running, but also following those other passions too? Like maybe the broadcasting slowed down, but you also started a podcast, See Totally Run, which you're almost at 200 episodes I saw, which is amazing. Do you think that's kind of like been a nice channel for you to still enter running in a different way and kind of learn from other people's experiences too?
Yeah, you know, I had my YouTube channel actually since 2010. And then the podcast started in 2016. So we shifted from videos to podcasting. And I started that because, first of all, I was coming back from my first child and people were wanting to know like how to train and do all that stuff through pregnancy. And then when I started my podcast, it was because people were shifting from watching people online to listening to people. So we started that. And I do think that, you know, now that, yeah, you put your passion into other things. And that's for me, you know, my podcast, my speaking, it might not always be about my life as a runner, but just having that focus and that drive and that commitment. And, you know, my tagline on See Totally Run is get after it. And so I use that in any place in my life. Like, you know, I just want to get after it. I don't want to float through life. I don't want to just be that person that's okay with going through the same motions day after day. I want to see what I'm made of and I want to you know, hopefully challenge myself like I did when I was an athlete. So the podcast has been super fun. It's been really good for me as a broadcaster to kind of have those reps every week of interviewing people and being, you know, kind of on, because, you know, when that red light goes on, you know, you got to bring it. So it's been a really nice sort of practice for me to keep going. But I also just love hearing everyone's journey in the sport, whether they're elites or they're just starting for the very first time to get out the door. Like, it's just such a cool community. And yeah, it's been really special to be a part of.
I asked this question to Chris Chavez, which I know you've had on the show as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have no formal training in podcasting or as a host. So we're 2 years in now, and I just like talking to people. So, you know, I'm trying to get better as a host as we go along here. But what are some ways that you've evolved as both a broadcaster and a podcaster?
Oh, man. I don't even know. You tell me if you listen to some of the podcasts. You know, there's times where I forget that I'm actually interviewing someone and I'm just like on a phone call, I think. And, you know, that is good for some of them. But then other times I'm like, oh, wait a second. What did I just say? Like, you know, I'm happy I have an editor, to be honest, because I wish my editor could walk around with me in life and just be like, wait, let's go back 2 seconds and start that sentence again. But I think that just, you know, having those conversations with people have made me better on air. And, you know, I've been able to dig deeper into the life of the athlete sometimes, you know, especially the elites when I have them on and then I go to the New York City Marathon or to the Olympic Trials or wherever I'm doing the commentary. I have a little bit more knowledge than, you know, what they maybe would just tell a reporter that's, you know, doing a newspaper or an online article. Because I think we have these conversations that get a little bit more in depth. And they also know that I've been there, done that, and that I'm a goofball. So we kind of have fun. you know, I mean, I've really enjoyed the show for so many different reasons. And I don't know if I've gotten any better over the years, but I think the editing has gone down. So maybe that's a sign that it's getting better, or at least people are accepting my faults. I don't know.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you're just yourself on the show. And that's, I think, when you start one of these things, you just want to make sure like you're as authentic as possible. And that comes out in the audio, you know. And I was also going to comment, like, switching from video to audio is probably a good thing, because runners now listen to podcasts when they're running.
Yeah, instead of for music, sure. So. Yeah. And you know what's funny is I don't listen to much when I'm running. I'm, again, a little bit nervous about my surroundings. So I don't listen to much then, but when I'm driving or, you know, when I'm making dinner or whatever, I love to listen to the podcast. So it's fun to hear when people are listening and where they're listening at. But yeah, it's been cool to hear the feedback from all of the different levels of listeners. You know, they're not all elites. They're not all female. They're not all male. Like, it's just, the demographic is pretty cool.
Is there an interview that stands out to you, and like what's the maybe most interesting lesson that you've learned from one of your conversations?
Ooh, you're making me think. You know, I always go back when just recently I've had a number of people ask me what's my favorite interviews, and I'd have to say I love my interviews with Gabe Grunewald, because I'll be able to take those with me forever. And Gabe is you know, now in heaven. She is somebody that I've looked up to for so many years. And even though she was 10 years younger than me, she's like a little sister. She died of cancer, and she was a professional runner. And you guys can check her out at bravelikegabe.org. But I do a lot of On the Run podcasts. And typically, I mean, I haven't done them now for almost a year because of everything we've been going through. But I'll take people out on the run, and we mic up. And those are my favorite ones, because when you're on the run, you totally get a different conversation. People open up much quicker. And even if they're breathing heavy, which a lot of people are like, I don't want to run, I'm going to breathe heavy. It's fun, because then you go for a run with them if you listen on the run, and you feel like you're running alongside of us. So those are my favorite. But Meb is a favorite interview every single time. He and I are, you know, just go back to the 1990s when we used to race, and, you know, all the people along the way. I just had a really fun one, like I said, with Gwen Jorgensen, her mom and sister. That to me is like what sport's all about, hearing the entire journey of a family. And yeah, it's all over the place.
You've raced a lot, right? But like, what's your favorite event to cover?
Oh, good question. I love doing all of them, but I think the marathon now has become my favorite event to cover, just because a lot of times I'm either out in front of the lead, you know, woman or male or female. And then when I'm in the booth, it's just so exciting because there's so much action, because you can have, you know, people falling off and you have cameras everywhere. And it's just a really cool story throughout that 2.5-3 hour long broadcast. I don't love commentating on the jumps and the throws and things like that, because I don't know much about that.
Yeah.
I feel like I just sort of stumble when I'm doing those, but you know, it's part of the sport, and I love watching it. It's just, I'm not good at like knowing what's going on in the athlete's mind, because I've never done it.
Yeah. Well, it's also cool. Like you said the marathon, I thought that was interesting, but it's, you get to see it unravel, right? It's not so quick.
Or you see someone getting sick, or you see somebody cramping, or, you know, you see someone coming from behind, and there's so much in that happens within a marathon, and I just love it. A lot of people click off, you know, if they're not a true running fan, they'll click off from the marathon because it's too long of an event. But if they actually sit through it, they'll find that, you know, there's just so many different stories within the big story. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, obviously watching Meb and then Des Linden too, taking, you know, Boston. Meb's taken both Boston and New York. Like, those are pretty exciting moments for, you know, American runners and in general. But the one coming up now is going to be London Marathon that's going to happen. And it's Bekele against Kipchoge, which is crazy. Did you ever think you'd see the 2 hour marathon?
I mean, I still would like to see it at a major. I think that'll be pretty fun to see if we can.
Yeah.
But I think the way that, again, not getting too far into shoes and things, like just with the technology and the way they were able to set that race up, Kipchoge was the guy to do it. So it was fun to see him be able to, you know, see it through. But yeah, it's still, I really want to see it happen within a race. That's what I'd like to see.
And do you have your own goals for the marathon? Because I know you've ran a couple now.
Well, so my first marathon was when my second baby was 4 months old. That week he turned 4 months. And I took a month off after every baby. So I only had about 8 weeks of true marathon training. And I ran 3:02. And then last year I ran one, and I just wanted to break 3 hours. And I ran 2:52. And so that was exciting to see that I could train the way I train, which is not very intense anymore, and run that fast. So I don't know. There were times where I think maybe I'd like to try to run under 2:45, but it's a lot of work, and I love days off. I mean, I love the run, but I like to see days of zero as well. So we'll see. I don't know. That's a really bad answer.
No, it's okay.
I don't know, but I don't have any like desire to try to run, you know, 16 minutes on the road anymore. Running an 18-minute 5K is fun. I still feel like that's fast, and I feel happy when I'm done with it. But I don't do a lot of real training anymore. I just kind of run hard on my runs, and then I'll throw a long run in here and there. And, you know, I'm happy I can still run pretty fast off of that stuff.
Yeah, and that's frustrating for a runner like me who's been doing it for like 10 years, you know, against somebody that's been doing it like their entire lives, because they can just wake up in the morning and go run fast and with very little training, and you got to work so hard to get there. How do you find marathon training compared to what you were doing like earlier on in your career?
I love marathon training, but I don't do it as intense as I would if I were a pro, you know, like I like the way I train for a marathon, and that's like 45 miles a week, one long run, maybe a medium long run. And then I have a couple days off and I do some 20 or 30 minute runs. Like I started Strava this year for a different like virtual race. But if people go and look at my Strava, they will see how I train. It's very much like everyone else that is doing it in the masses. You know, it's not like an elite runner. I do still run kind of fast. I can run sub 7 minute pace most days, but that's just from, like you said, all those years of running. But now on the other side, like this morning, for instance, I was like, why don't I just get up and just slog through a run? But I don't do that. I get out and I hammer, and sometimes I come back and my hamstrings are tight, because who goes from sleeping until 6:30 and then they're out the door by 6:45 and they're running 6:45 pace? That's me. And it's not always smart.
Yeah. They say you got to run slow to run fast, right?
That's what I'm gathering. But that's not how I do it. I run hard and I rest hard and I don't run very much. So if anyone wants in on my training plan, let me know. I can help coach you through it, but I'm not going to say it's, you know, it's easy. It's, there's hard days and then there's really nice long rest days.
Nice. Have you got into coaching at all?
I do coach. Yeah. I coach a few clients on the side, and I actually am the fitness director for a company called Moms on the Run. So there's about 2,000 athletes around the country here in the States, and I write all their workouts and, you know, do different things for that company. And then I now help Rock and Roll Marathon. So I do some challenges and write up some plans for them and do some video work and things like that. So yeah, I do coach. I just don't have, you know, 100 athletes. I just have a few here and there. And then I have these other companies that I work for.
Mm. What is it like to actually be a mom on the run? Like what, how do you work in training, being a mom of three, being a wife too, and like, you know, and running a household and doing all these things, like, and the broadcasting and the podcast, and how like, you're a super mom, it sounds like.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I'm just curious, like, you know, and we probably have some listeners too, who, you know, maybe just had a kid or want to know how to balance everything and get their training in and find time for themselves too. Cause I mean, that's super important. So
yeah.
Do you have any tips and tricks that you can share?
Where you're running close to bed? Because I do. I'm not joking. Like every now and then I'll wear my, well, more times than not, I'll have some sort of running attire on so I can get up and get out the door fast. But yeah, it's busy. Life is busy. And, you know, before the pandemic, there were times where I was like, what hat am I wearing today? Where am I going? And even as I sit here in my office where I do my podcast, I look around along the floorboards. I have a bag for like every, you know, job or event that I'm going to. Like I have a Moms on the Run bag that has my gear that I wear for those days. I have, you know, my travel bag for my broadcast. I have my old camp bag because I didn't have my Kerry Telson training camp. Like I have all these bags. So I say hats, but it's more like bags. And I will tell you though, the most important thing for me is to move my body. And like I said, I enjoy days off, but when I go out and run, I have to do it in the morning. Otherwise it really doesn't happen. Like we talked about me not running today, and I might be able to sneak in a 20-minuter before I go and pick my kids up from the pod that they're in right now. But it's busy, it's tough. But I know a lot of other people that work a lot harder than I do when it comes to training, and they work as much as I do. And they get it done. So, you know, just find that time of day that works for you and get it in. Like, it doesn't have to be an hour. It doesn't have to be an hour and a half. I love the 20-minute run. It makes me feel alive. I get a sweat on. And then I can move on throughout my day. So I think, you know, again, if people were to look at my training, they'd see a lot of short runs. But I'm in and out. And then I move on and become mom or entrepreneur or whatever I am.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like it's incredible to hear like how you juggle that and balance that. Like I'm not a mother, so I don't know how to relate, but I can imagine it's really, I mean, I have a dog, so that's,
yeah, you're, you know, fur dad, kind of, I was going to say. You
know, so it's gotta be really tough. And
it is, yeah, hard, sure, but it's so rewarding, you know, like,
yeah.
I wanted to be a parent. Not everyone does, but for us, for Charlie and I, you know, we made that choice and that life path, and you get it done. And these kids for us, like, they bring so much joy. I mean, yeah, I yell loud. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't have the windows open very open because I yell loud, but they're really not that scared of me. It's so funny. Like, not your kids shouldn't be scared of you, but mine kind of laugh when I yell loud. And I'm like, that makes me more mad. Don't do that.
Exactly.
But it's a fun life. It's busy and I'm exhausted, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Awesome. Do you have time for the other things too? We talk about cross training a lot with run training, and do you do any of that? And you know, you said you had not, you have never had a lick of alcohol, so one of my questions goes out the door: beer or wine. But
I have a Dr. Pepper at least once every day. Isn't that terrible?
But oh, I like nice
Dr. Pepper, and I'm not a coffee drinker, so you know, okay. Like it's funny. My family will have an event or a party or whatever, and they always have a Dr. Pepper for me. So that is kind of my drink of choice. And I love to dance. So I do get on the dance floor as soon as I walk into any establishment that has dancing.
Amazing.
And I drive then everyone home because I haven't had any alcohol, and I usually have to get a chocolate shake. So like there's things, I got my things. But yeah, it's, I don't even know what your question was, but yeah, I'm not a drinker.
Just in terms of, like maybe like nutrition and cross training. It is, is that something you've implemented or,
can I be really honest
now than before? Yes. No.
So no, I don't implement it. And, I would, if I had to. So I have been able to stay pretty much injury free, knock on wood. I have things that come up. Like I have had a hamstring issue that I had to take 4 or 5 days off, but then I usually come back to it. So what I've been doing different as, you know, a former, you know, elite professional runner is I take time off now when I have to. So I would get on a bike if I had access right now to a bike, you know, in a gym. I would go maybe and get on the elliptical a little bit more if I had to because of an injury, but I like to run and I like to lift. So I'll do some of that stuff at home, but unless there's a big injury, which I haven't had in a lot of years, which now I'm nervous because I said it out loud, I haven't had to cross train. I do have a zero runner, which is like an elliptical in my garage, but I haven't had to use it for years. And so I think for me, I don't run enough to really see those overuse injuries. And that's what I had when I was training. You know, I didn't really get a lot of, you know, just kind of freak incidences besides my tumor in my heel. I had overuse injuries, and now there's no way I could have an overuse injury because I don't overuse my body. I just, I basically do the amount I can do, and that keeps me fit and it keeps me healthy.
Okay. That's kind of what I was looking for. I appreciate your honesty. So that's,
yeah.
I think
good,
the lesson,
like, as a coach, I would tell, I always write in a cross training day if people like to do it and if they have the time. But, you know, I just feel like most people that want to run are going to get out there and run, even if they are, you know, dealing with something that they can run through. Like my hamstring injury, for instance, I just had to kind of slow it down or shorten my run or take time, like I said. So, yeah, I'm not very good about supplementing anymore. And a lot of people say, Carrie, you're going to need to, the older you get, you're going to want to maybe get on a bike or whatever. And I understand that, but for right now, I'm enjoying just being 100% runner.
And so what is, like, what is your time off look like? Cause you say you like your time off. So what is that when you're not dealing with the kids and not running, what are you doing?
You know, we like to travel when we can. We just bought a canoe, which we like to do. We're an outdoors family. We so would love to get an RV.
Oh, yeah.
We take an RV trip usually every year. Last year, Charlie did the 100-mile bike race in Leadville, Colorado. And so we took the RV out there. And, you know, we're pretty simple. The run for me is my fun. And that's, my husband is an Ironman. And he's kind of all in or all out, that guy. He says he's on the lifetime taper. And he truly is. Like, he either is full on in training or he takes like 6 months of nothing. And but we're always outdoors. We're playing every sport we possibly can. And, you know, if there's no travel involved, we're happy to be home because I don't get to be home very often.
Mm, yeah, for sure. What, I didn't touch on this before, but you mentioned like working, you know, the mental game a little bit. Was there any like mantras or any like things that helped you like get out the door, or like, is there a specific route that you'd do or something in a race that you'd say to yourself when you were kind of getting down on yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I think get after it was the one. That's kind of what I've used with my camp and now with speaking and my podcast. That was one that I kind of always repeated to myself because I just feel like if you say get after it, like you can't really just say it without like getting kind of pumped. Like there's just that little energy surge that goes with it, at least for me. But I did have a lot of positive word cues when I was competing, whether it was a different one every lap or every K, every mile. I would just try to repeat those positive words throughout my mind. And I still do that even, you know, as I'm going into a speech or a broadcast. You know, I sort of get that athlete mind where it might not be that I have to think of the strategy of a race, but it's like the strategy of, you know, how I'm going to perform and what the layout will look like and what words I'll come back to if I start to lose my way. And I think I do that through life too, you know, I just like sometimes under my breath, or even if I'm talking to myself in the car or, you know, wherever, you know, I kind of always go back to those positive affirmations that I use throughout life. But my husband is an architect, and when I was competing, he made this really cool, it was like a funky piece of board with these house numbers and things, and it was the American records. And I never got one, but I got close, and every time I left the door, I saw those American records. And that to me was, you know, a kind of a, it was a really cool gift, but also just a reminder of what I was aiming for. And I don't have that anymore. And I feel like maybe we should, like, that should be a new thing in our family. Like, what's our goal for the year or the season or whatever, and just see it every time you walk out the door. But I think really being kind to yourself is the big thing. You know, we're hard on ourselves. We are. And I think it's okay to be, but I also think it's okay to say you're doing a good job.
For sure. Is that one of the messages you like to get across in your speeches? And what is like, what are the main things that you like to share with people that when you're doing these talks?
Yeah, I think the big thing now is that, you know, so many times when I was competing, I'd go and speak and it was sort of unrelatable, and they wanted to hear the story, the journey, the ups and downs of being an Olympic athlete. But now that I've moved on from competing at such a high level and I've become more like everyone else, right? Like, I don't want to say that I wasn't like everyone, but, you know, there's not, I think I just read there's 100,000 Olympic athletes on the globe. And that to me seemed, maybe that's just track athletes. I don't know what the exact stat was, but, you know, I told Charlie, I'm like, there's 100,000, I think it just is Olympians. And, that's crazy. Like, that's not that many. And I get where some people say, you know, it's just so unrelatable. And now that I'm a mother of three and I'm exhausted from work and, you know, you're thinking about saving up for college, you know, for three kids and all these things that I worry about and that other people worry about, they really enjoy sort of hearing how I handle that and how I keep, you know, trying to get out the door and keeping my body and my mind fresh for me, so I can be a better mom and partner and businesswoman. And, you know, that's what I think the really is the message behind my speaking now, is that we all can do this. We just have to find sort of that inner animal in us, like we would if we were competing, and now as professionals or partners or whatever it is in life.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of spoke about the goals and that you should set goals and stuff. Is there anything that you're thinking about doing, maybe not in running, but is there anything in general that you'd like to achieve, like down the road here?
Oh my gosh. I think about that all the time. You know, I just wish if I had a mic on all the time throughout the day, like if I could edit that, I think that like the thoughts in your mind would be so interesting. Because I go all over the place. Like, there are times where I want to just pack up my family and go to LA and become an actress, because I've always sort of wanted to do that. And I know I probably won't, but, you know, I'm not afraid to entertain an idea. I've never been afraid of that. Like, if someone said, Carrie, we'll take you out to LA and we're going to put you on a show, or we're going to put you in front of people, I probably would say, okay, like, I'm super scared of this, but okay, I'll try it. So yeah, I don't know what the next goal is for me per se, but I just know that I want to be good at things. I want to work hard at things. And, you know, whether I'm at a corporation or at a foundation or wherever I'm at, I want to help and I want people to enjoy life. And I understand it's not easy. Life hasn't been easy for me either. And I had a sports psychologist one time say, quit hiding behind your smile. You're just talking to me here. And I think I do hide behind my smile a little bit, but I also love life. So I'm okay with where it takes me. I just want to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the most important thing, like finding what it is in your life that makes you happy, you know.
We
search for it often, and like if I know for me, like balance is super important, getting in my runs and you know, the family life and friends and work and all that stuff. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it's ever the perfect mix, but if you can maintain some kind of balance there, exactly. It's definitely helpful.
Yeah.
What does running mean to you?
Oh, I want to say everything, but it's not. I mean, my family is everything, but the run is so important to me. You know, I really do feel like a different woman when I'm done with my run, and, you know, throughout it as well. But I just love that feeling when I'm done. Like, I really do feel like I can conquer the day. Maybe it's even conquer the month or whatever it is after a run. And I love the community. I feel at home talking to any runner. I just feel like they are someone that gets me and I get them. Doesn't mean that we are the same, you know, at running the mile or the same marathon pace or whatever it is. That doesn't matter to me. I could care less how fast people are. I just think, you know, that exhilaration that we really do get from the run. I know it's hard. It's hard for me every single time I go out the door. It is. People a lot of times think, oh, it's easy because you can go and run fast. Well, it's not easy. I just run a different pace. And yeah, maybe I've done it for so long that I'm used to it. But it is hard. And I love it. I just think that it has given me just a wonderful life of, you know, finding out who I am.
Is there like a big run community in like where you are now? And like, do you do most of your running solo, or do you try and run in a group from time to time, or is there no time for that?
No, I have some partners that I'll meet up with here and there. I can't do it every day, but you know, I try to meet up with running partners, training partners. But the running community here in the Twin Cities, is really nice. I mean, we have a big running community, and where I live, I see so many runners any time of the day. So it's really special because, you know, I'll be waving left and right at people and saying hi, and then I'll get a message like, hey, saw you out there getting after it. So I love it. I love the running community everywhere. I mean, even I feel like now, because I've been in so many of the different like cities for the big races, I feel like every time I'm on a run, I feel like I meet somebody or I see somebody from the past. So it's a small world, but yet it's a big world at the same time.
So where's your favorite place to run in Minnesota, and where's your favorite place to run in the world?
In Minnesota, I mean, I love running Skunk Hollow back home in Dawson, Minnesota. it's seriously like a section out around a cornfield, but it's beautiful. And then when I'm in the cities, I love going on the River Road, because the River Road goes from downtown Minneapolis to downtown St. Paul. And then it has all these offshoots, and it's always busy with people. And there's rarely a runner that goes by that doesn't wave or say hi. So I always feel like they're all my friends, even if I've never met them before. but you know, one of my favorite places to race and to run was Victoria, Canada. I love being there. I thought it was beautiful. Nice. I felt like they didn't have any squirrels, but I'm sure they have squirrels. But what I saw was there were these beautiful rabbits everywhere. I'm like, what's up with these rabbits? They're everywhere. And they were like big fur babies, you know, like they look like they were people's pets, but they were just out in the wild. Yeah. I mean, I love running everywhere, but I don't love running by myself so much. Like that's probably why I do a lot of those 20-minute hard runs, because I want to just sort of get in and get home so I know that I'm good to go. But when I'm with someone or in a beautiful place, I could run forever.
Amazing. Yeah, I asked that question just because, you know, if I'm ever in those places, then, you know, I need a spot to run, you know, like it's always good to get the insider scoop. But certainly running in Vancouver is... Yeah, I've been there before, and it is beautiful. Up where I'm working now, like the rabbits are like the size of dogs. It's insane.
Is that weird, or is that normal for Canada? Like
no, I think I've never seen rabbits so big. Actually,
me too. Where I'm working, what the heck?
It's crazy.
And everyone was like, "What's the deal, Carrie?" I was running with a bunch of Canadians, and I'm like, "We don't have that unless you have them in a cage or in your home."
Yeah. What's the specialty of Minnesota? Like, what's the big thing there? What are you guys known for?
In Minnesota? Oh, well, the lakes. Yeah. The land of 10,000 lakes. I okay. grew up in, like I said, I've mentioned Dawson a number of times here, but that's Gnometown, USA. So those little gnomes that are in gardens and things.
Yeah.
We have actually like 3-foot gnomes out there that are of people that have come and gone or are still out there that are, you know, I don't know, the mayor or a famous basketball coach or whatever. So those are 2 Minnesota things. But I think Minnesota is just known for, you know, the beautiful 4 seasons that we have here. A lot of people think it's just cold. Well, we have beautiful colors in the fall, and the winter is really quite pretty. And our springs are beautiful, and our summers are hot and humid, actually. So we have 4 distinct seasons, and it's an awesome state to be from.
Cool. Very cool. So I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and I know that you do something called rapid fire. So I thought it'd be fun if I did a rapid fire for you.
Okay, bring it. Let's see if I can
you're
do
open
it.
To it.
Sure.
I don't know how many. I can't keep track of how many questions you ask, but I wrote down a few so we can.
It has to be less than a minute on my podcast because I put it on.
Oh wow!
Instagram.
Okay, let me see. I got a timer.
But you
going,
can do
so
as
can...
long as you want.
Okay, sounds good. So let's get started then. So my first question is 5K or marathon?
Ooh, marathon.
Twins or Vikings?
Oh, I like the Vikings.
Vikings or Wild?
Ooh, I like the Vikings still. I like to watch football.
Okay. And I won't even ask you about the Timberwolves because I know you're a basketball fan.
Yeah.
Favorite type of workout, tempo or track?
Oh, now tempo, definitely.
Types of movies, comedy or horror?
Oh, gosh, probably comedy now, but used to like horror.
pre-run meal, pizza or pasta?
Pasta.
Types of music, rock or country?
Ooh, I love big hair bands, so rock.
Nice. Favorite world major, the New York City Marathon or Boston Marathon?
Oh my gosh. I like New York. They have they've had me on their team for years. So I'm gonna say New York.
Awesome. Yeah, I ran it last year. It was a special race for sure. Types of races, your track races or your cross country races?
Cross country, 100%.
And that's my rapid fire for you.
I like to go back and think about all those things. They're so fun. But I do want to say I love Boston as well. I mean, all those things, you know, rapid fire, it's so fun. But really, a lot of times, you stump people because how do you make those decisions?
Yeah. I'm Italian, so pizza pasta is like sacrilege. I can't really choose against them.
Yeah, definitely pizza after that, for sure.
I know you ran a couple marathons. Which ones were they? And do you plan to actually run the New York City and Boston Marathon?
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, I would love to run all those, but right now I love to work them. So I'm probably not going to run them until they say, hey, by the way, you're not going to be working this year. So then I'll say, well, hey, worked all those years. Can you get a girl in? But I run only the Twin Cities Marathon. So just right here in my back door or backyard, I should say. I'm here and it's fun because so many people are still, you know, very much in tune with what's happening in my world. And so I got a lot of people yelling my name, which is nice.
Awesome. Well, so where can people find out more about you and your podcast and all the things that you do?
Yeah, you know, you can find us at ctollerun, that's ctollerun.com. I have my podcast every week. And I'm not as good on social media as I should be, but I am on Carrie Tullifson. That's the one you should look at most times, but also on ctollerun.
That's great. So thank you so much, Carrie, for coming on today. I really appreciate your time and, you know, sharing your run journey with us and what it's like to be a parent and a runner too, and all those good things. And I can't wait to see which big goal you come up with next. And hopefully we see you running out there on the roads again soon.
Well, thank you guys so much. You guys have a great podcast as well. And thanks for bringing the joy to the sport.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Take care.
Are you already subscribed to La Rundown, Running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.